Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
There is approximately a 0% chance that Tony La Russa is the next manager of the White Sox.
Yeah, I don't think it's zero.
Welcome home, Hall of Famer Tony La Russa, next manager of the Chicago White Sox.
White Sox manager Tony La Russa's hiring was made even more controversial after a second DUI arrest was revealed last year.
Now WGN has the exclusive dash cam video of that incident.
I'm legitimate. I'm a Hall of Famer.
6-7 to score, Danny Parkins.
Hey, Rick, when in that process did you find out about the arrest?
You know, Danny, I'm not that interested in sort of going through the hiring process.
Tony La Russa is awesome.
Let's be honest, like, Tony's not going out there playing any games. He's the guy that just make the lineup card.
Liam Hendricks is your base runner.
Well, you know, I'll reread that situation. I'm guessing you know the rules better.
You're mean Mercedes. Does it matter? You swung away on 3-0?
I don't like it.
You made a mistake. He plays the game of Major League Baseball that respects the game, respects the opponents.
And if you have a problem with whatever happens, then put a pitcher out there. That's the way I see it.
Lance has a locker. I have an office.
The Houston Astros are headed to the American League Championship Series. They close it out on the road here in Chicago.
I always waited so the ownership of the front office said, we want you back. If they didn't, I just walked away.
The Chicago losing streak has reached 7. Byron Buxton.
Were they surprised that they came after you in a 3-1 count?
Kind of.
It's a rough time for the Sox right now. This is going to be loss number 8 in a row.
I'm shocked that Cueto is still in this game. I know La Russa knows his team better than I do.
Yeah. I just can't believe Cease is still out there.
I just can't believe it.
Wow.
Tony La Russa managing it. Very old school.
Wait a second.
They're going to intentionally walk him.
On 1-2?
Yep.
So let me ask you a question. Is there some question about whether that was a good move or not?
Wow.
I mean, is that really a question?
So the Sox threw him a pitch.
Yeah, they threw him one pitch, and then they decided to walk him. Apparently, didn't like that pitch.
Can I ask why you would do it after a pitch?
No, I have no idea.
We've seen some stuff.
Yeah, we have.
The clip on Twitter of Tony La Russa sleeping.
Tony, come on. Just wake up, man.
Look, it comes down to what Jerry Reinsdorf wants.
It's easy to fall back on some old narratives that this was about friendship or potentially righting old wrongs or something like that.
Part of the reason why Tony La Russa is the manager now is because Jerry felt bad about firing him almost 40 years ago.
It appears that the plan of the Sox is to get off early and first pitch fastball. If you see it, they're hacking. And opposing pitching staffs are going to know that.
I know Tony La Russa is a Hall of Fame manager, and I'm just little Chuck Scarfine sportscaster. That's a bad move, awful move. He lost the game here today.
I don't know if they want to be there. They don't have any fun at all.
That'll be deep enough not only to get the run home, but for a play at second. And Mendick is out at second base. The run did not cross in time.
There was a couple of miscues there, and it really cost the Sox.
Byron Buxton catching it at the wall, and there'll be 3 outs at the end of all this.
What in the world is Josh Harrison doing anywhere near him?
Right now, the White Sox are a frustrating team to watch.
They used to look like Rick Renteria with credentials.
So the Arizona Diamondbacks sweep this weekend series.
When you talk to people in Chicago, fans, they don't like them. They want to see a team play fundamentally sound and with effort.
And instead of change the game, it should be change the culture.
The headline news today is Tony La Russa is stepping aside.
Our team's record this season is a final reality.
And that's that.
One,
two, three.
And here we go. Here we go. Here we go, Jim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That had to feel good to put together.
Do you think that made more White Sox fans happy or mad all over again to relive all of the frustrations amidst the wide open championship window?
Yeah, I think all the emotions are in there. You know, I got goosebumps. I got genuine goosebumps from the Chris Tannehill Goodfellas treatment for Tony La Russa. The whole thing felt like a freaking movie. All right, it felt like this weird Shakespearean tragedy with, you know, vengeance and like trying to right this wrong from decades ago and powerful people looking like they were prisoners as they had no choice but to live this out and fans going through the torment. I mean, just unbelievable ups and downs of emotion. So all captured really nicely right there.
Texter writes in, I wish I heard this open about 6 months ago. Someone on Twitch said, opens great, should have never had to happen. Yeah, can't go back in time. Then someone else said, the most hotly awaited Goodfellas treatment ever.
Oh, it's true. It's true. People just clamoring and hoping for that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Was it worth it, Jerry? I wonder if Jerry feels like it was worth it to waste these 2 years of the ball club. I wonder if Tony feels like it was worth it to come back for all the aggravation and end up going out like he went out yesterday.
Tony said in his statement that there were more good moments than bad. And even though the record is what it was, and so he has to grade it as a failure because he was brought there to win a championship, he said there were still way more positive experiences than negative, and he was thankful for having done it. So if you take him at his word in his statement,
yeah,
that's how he feels.
Yeah, well, you enjoy things more when you're hammered.
Oh, God.
So I'm sure he had a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched that video, watched the video after it had been happening during the show yesterday, but then watching it last night, it was really just a couple of moments of the trademark arrogant edge. You know, it was a couple little moments of that, like, I'm not going to tell you, a couple of things like that. But overall, it was a sad, sad guy, a disappointed guy, a contemplative guy who knows it failed.
He's a competitor. He's the guy who says, hey, Tony, how you doing?
Well, we got a game tonight.
Right, right, right.
Ask me when it's over.
And he's also a guy who knew that he had become a distraction.
Yeah.
And said he
thinks he only became a distraction because of the health stuff. He does not necessarily agree with the fact that he became a distraction earlier.
No, but there was a moment there where he talked about the end once he realized that him hanging around and being on the edge of possibly coming back post Miguel Cairo.
But that's what I'm saying.
It took all the way until there.
It wasn't the fire Tony chance. It wasn't the losing. It wasn't the not knowing the rules. It wasn't the insular hire, the neutering of the general manager. He was cool with all that. It was oh, will he or won't I come back? I guess I could see how that would be a distraction.
Texter fighting with my statement that so many emotions were in there. All the emotions were in there except happiness, hope, joy, and anything positive.
Yeah, that makes sense. Danny, how did it feel for you?
Shut up. No, it was it's weird because, you know, when I did it, I made it in a place of rage, of animosity, but then after watching that presser yesterday, I really wish the players would have gotten more of that angst as opposed to Tony La Russa. Like, Tony was, he made his mistakes along the way, no doubt, and he never should have been the manager, but listening to those players talk yesterday, and we'll get to that later, like, I really, they blew us. You know what I mean? This wasn't
a
Tony La Russa thing. Those players on the field are the ones that brought us where we are today, you know, and I'm glad that that chapter is closed, but you can't go back on a lot of that stuff, man, so you just have to clean it up as best you can, and they've got a tough job ahead of them over there at 35th and Shields.
Well, the manager job is a tough one.
This is an organization thing. I don't agree that it was just a player's thing. I don't think it was just. It sounded like,
I mean,
it, but maybe
basically the same players as last season that won over 90 games. The core is the same, and most of those guys in that core underperformed. And that's why I'm not so quick to get rid of Jose Abreu. He doesn't make a lot of money, but you can't, you know what I mean? Like, Andrew Vaughn has not proven anything yet. Mm-hmm. You should have traded him before he even, you know, stepped foot on a major league diamond. But anyway, but the players, like, we'll hear Liam Hendricks talk later on about some of the stuff that was going on and the mentality that they had. Granted, your manager's responsibility is to, like, kind of read your room.
Oh, yes.
And take the temperature.
He let it completely drift.
Yeah, he absolutely did. But still, man, where's your professional pride as players where you let it get to the point?
Well, that's why this job is a tricky thing right now.
It is. And so there's only 30 of them, so it's a good job. And it's a very talented team with a high payroll, so it's a really good job. And it's in a winnable division. So
a great media market.
So you can make the argument that it is still a great job. And you don't want to follow the guy that won. You want to follow the guy that failed. Mm. Now, in theory, it should be easier to follow Rick Renteria than Tony La Russa, but not this version of Tony La Russa. The question is going to be, when you talk about these candidates, they're going to be an extension of the front office. We know that if Rick gets his way.
If he gets his way, yeah.
But we're going to know a lot about who really has the power here based on the person that they hire. Like, is it going to be someone that is more, you know, Rick said it's not going to, you don't have to have White Sox experience. It's going to be different than last time.
He said a lot of the exact same things that he said last time.
Right.
And the feeling that that he was trying to get across is that now they're going to do it right. That now they're going to go and have the exhaustive search, and Rick will get to choose along with, you know, Kenny and Jerry, but it'll be that partnership that it is for just about every organization. In fact, now every single organization in MLB. But this is a very different situation than it was. The players are 2 years older. The salaries in their once seemingly sensible preemptive contract extensions for a couple of them are much more cumbersome now. Carlos Rodon is gone. Lucas Giolito has regressed badly. Michael Kopech still has not proven that he can be what seemed to be this great starter for the future. This is a different job than it was 2 years ago, and a much harder job. And, like, the big thing for me, Danny, is that 2 years ago, whoever they were going to bring in had to be a coattail rider on the culture. I said it a lot, and it was in regards to Tony, but it really was anybody. They had built a thing with TA and with Giolito and this young, expressive vibe. They had a solid culture that Ricky Renteria had helped to foster, this youthful exuberance. Whoever came in was just going to be a coattail rider. Now, you got to build one. You need a person who knows how to freaking build a culture, how to be stern, how to teach veterans, how to reinvent the bullpen with a bunch of guys who aren't used to being reinvented, how to supply energy and accountability. It's not just a plug-and-play position where I think a ton of managers could have won a division right there in year one like they did. You have to be a builder. You got to be a culture builder now, and that's a very different thing to need from a lot of different candidates.
It is. I do think that there is going to be a tremendous amount of addition by subtraction, though. And that is not to minimize the hire, but to Tanny's point, it is a really talented team that is largely going to be the same. The roster isn't going to change. So you always talk about changing around the, like, winning in the margins and that stuff. So yeah, you got to be able to teach. You got to set a good culture, all of that stuff. But if this guy was the culture vampire and sucked the energy out, and he's gone,
the room will get lighter.
The room will get lighter, just as an addition by subtraction thing. And again, that is not to minimize it. Like, I think that the worst thing they could do would be to do a familiar thing. You got to go for best and brightest. You got to go outside the organization. You got to do a comprehensive. They should interview 7, 8, 10, 9, 10 people for the job. You know what I mean? Cast a wide net. Get a bunch of different ideas. Try to interview someone. Hell, interview someone on a staff in the AL Central. Someone who had to play you 17 times this year.
Someone who's watched you and knows you well.
And get their insight into you. Like, the hire matters, but it does not matter nearly as much as what they do with the roster.
Yeah, but the personality of the person 2 years ago, I don't know that you would have said that you needed somebody who was going to get in Tim Anderson's face, get in Yoan Moncada's face, like, pull veterans aside and say, look, I don't know who taught you, and I don't care, but you don't do relays right. You don't move around defensively right. If you're going to play for me, and you're making $14 million, so I know you're probably going to play for me, you got to do this. Like, you need that capacity in a person which I don't think you thought you needed 2 years ago.
Although I'm agreeing with you that the job has changed. And so I guess my only small point of disagreement is that I do think that addition by subtraction with what you're talking about of like the culture building mm-hmm. aspect of it, man, their culture was awesome. We spent the first 100 games this year being like, hey, where's the swag?
Yeah.
What the hell happened here? Can you guys wake up?
It fell apart second half of last year. The fundamentals fell apart second half of last year, and nothing caught it.
Right, and we just, and I'll speak for myself, guilty, thought that it was going to come back with a new season. And maybe they got their ass kicked in the playoffs, and they rested on their laurels, and Tony.
Didn't
and
do jack squat in the offseason, yeah. And hit spring training, not working on the stuff they said they were going to work on.
They said they were going to work on it, right. But so I think that part of it does matter. I think the accountability part is going to matter maybe even a little bit more. Because I assume that these guys are going to be able to. These are professional athletes.
So who's accountability? The players?
Yeah, man. You guys underperformed. Like, yeah, to your point, teach about a relay throw. Teach about proper base running etiquette. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that stuff. Like, someone who they respect. Not fear, but someone who they respect. Who can not pull a guy out of a game like Andrew Jones and Bobby Cox because that happened one time a quarter of a century ago, and that's just not how you deal with the modern athlete.
But hold somebody accountable when they screw up and make sure it doesn't happen
however
again.
However you do that in the modern age of baseball with a $20 million athlete, you need the person who can maximize that for them. But the bigger decisions to me are, what do you do with all the first basemen on the roster? Who do you sell low on? What do you do if you bring Jose Abreu back? Like, the Rick Hahn operating within a budget and the margins on that roster, and like to your point, needing a perfect offseason.
Yeah, man.
That is the bigger part of this than the manager. The manager was a hell of a story because it was Tony La Russa and because he was Jerry's friend. The manager is going to be a much smaller piece of the story for next year's White Sox team, whether it's Espada or Carlos Beltran or whomever they hire.
Yeah, it's going to be that's true.
AJ Pruszynski.
That's true.
It's going to be, I mean, I guess not if it's Ozzy, but, and it won't be. But if it's going to be a much smaller piece of the story, regardless of who they hire.
And those who have thought that we have focused too much on La Russa, that others have focused, like, see, it wasn't just Tony. There'll be some of that comes out. But remember what I think it's always been. It's always been organizational. You need the right manager to deal with your roster that you create and handed him. You need the right right manager to bring out the personalities of the people that you've put together. So it was the forced choice, and then the awkwardness and the non-communication and the passive-aggressive BS atmosphere that got created when everybody got undermined by the owner doing his vanity project. So I don't think, let me say preemptively, I don't think that Tony got too much of the focus. I know that's going to be an easy place to go for a lot of people. I don't think that he did, because it was absolutely a symbol of how they screwed the entire pooch. But now here you go. Here's your chance, and things are different. Players have exposed themselves as to what they are, and you've got problems. You got big problems on this roster now.
Boomer Esiason will join us at 3 o'clock. He watches all the games, watches the Giants closely, does mornings on WFAN, his impressions of the Bears and offense and Justin Fields, and then we'll take some of the biggest stories in the NFL with him. But coming up next, there has not been a lot of positivity in these parts about the quarterback situation, and we found a little bit yesterday, so we wanted to have some time to actually react to it and see if we agree. Next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Are you kidding me? Tune in to Twitch.
Afternoons on The Score.
Snap at a play fake. Fields with time. Looking. Arching deep. Downfield. Going for Mooney. Over the shoulder. Got it inside the 30-yard line. Wow, what a catch. They aired it out. Fly down the sideline left. And that's a bomb of 56 yards. And the Bears in business. You know, connection there. Beating Adoree Jackson, who fell down trying to track down Darnell Mooney.
Jeff Joniak on the call. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the score. We will talk to Boomer Esiason at 3 o'clock this hour on the score, brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-4-KIDS. A 56-yard pass to Mooney is the sole passing game highlight of the season. It's being a little hyperbolic. There were a couple of nice screen passes. There were a couple of other passes over the middle. But, I mean, in terms of, like, a real highlight play.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the play action fake touchdown to
Equanimeous St. Brown
was a nice in-rhythm pass from Justin Fields. So there have been a couple, but not many.
You know, it's funny. Like, and there's only been a few like that. Right. But when we got talking to Trent Dilfer yesterday, he offered a different perspective. He felt like he was seeing more good stuff than we had seen all year. And obviously the numbers bear that out. But, you know, we're trying to watch and look at the specifics of
right.
See if there's any growth. And it's very, very negative around here, including me, about Justin's progression. So it's quite something when we get a national guy who is looking very carefully for us, specifically on our behalf, to look and sees things differently.
Right, he's not doing this anywhere else. He does it for the show, and he does it impartially. And so here is Trent Dilfer's positivity.
He did a lot of really good things. He didn't get protected. He made chicken soup out of chicken you-know-what a couple times. And he converted some big third downs. I mean, that he played really, really decisively, and considering what he was asked to do. And again, we got to frame this in what they can do, what they're asking him to do pretty well. But just for the Bears fans looking for the context here, is does Justin get better this week? Yes, he got much better this week. Based off TV copy yesterday, I can't think of one play. And there might be one that I'm missing in my, you know, again, I didn't chart this, but I can't think of one that his eyes weren't in the right place. I'll give you a great example. When they're backed up and he throws the ball way to his left, they get double A gap pressure, which, by the way, is terrible by the center. Well, let's get into this because teams are picking on the center and right guard. So, and that's a tough thing when you're a quarterback, when you know your center and right guard are square players and they're asking to play a lateral game. So teams are asking to play a lateral game and they're square players. So he gets inside pressure, a basic Mike Will stunt inside that should be easily picked up. But Mike has a right slide call. There's nobody to slide to. He should drop straight back, stone the first guy. Back comes in, stones the second guy. Clement does a really good job of poking the one high covered safety, his outside leverage, crosses his face. Justin's eyes are right there, ready to put it on his outside pad, and the guy's up in his grill. So, yeah, this is what the guys on local talk radio aren't watching. This is what PFF doesn't understand, is that, and you watch him based on what his job is and what he's being coached to do. This is yesterday. Yesterday, his starting point with his eyes, his progressions were right on point. And he just, I mean, it's nearly impossible when you have inside pressure all day long. I don't care who you are. This same type of pressure melted Tom Brady. It's melted Aaron Rodgers. It's melted Peyton Manning. I said it every week is on ESPN when I was there for 9 years. The kryptonite to any quarterback is immediate A-gap pressure in your face. I don't care who you are. When that pocket gets pushed back or there's free runners inside, your number one job is to protect the ball. If you step up and try to throw into that, you're risking ball security. So he's actually doing a great job, or did a great job yesterday, navigating some waters that were incredibly muddy.
I found that jarring. I found his perspective on it after living perhaps in our echo chamber, but certainly in what I think my eyes are seeing, I found it kind of jarring. He said that his eyes were in the right place all the time. I mean, I agree with what he's saying about the A-gap pressure and the pressure up the middle. That makes all the sense in the world. But as you watched that game, did you feel like the quarterback's eyes were in the right place that often?
Not all the time. It's hard for me to square 11 completions with that type of analysis and that type of positivity. And that's not just because you just look at the box score, right? You watch the games. My thing on Fields continues to be, I think that there's a lot there to like, and you're not really seeing any of it. So it's a hard thing. Like, that guy throws a great deep ball. That's a really valuable mm-hmm. skill in the NFL. But they don't have good pass protection, and they don't have a lot of speed. So how do we get to evaluate him throwing a deep ball if they don't have the pass protection to set up time for deep ball routes to develop?
Right.
He's a really, really special runner. But you don't want that to be your main thing. You want that to be your change of pace thing, right? Like, people talk about Josh Allen as a runner, but not among, like, the first two or three things that they mention with him. You don't want it to be your main thing as a quarterback. That's why everyone doubted Lamar Jackson. But now that Lamar's thrown for three or four touchdowns from the pocket and running, they're like, oh, man, Lamar could be MVP.
Right.
But it's still a special thing to have in field. But you're not seeing it. And so I do think at all times with Fields, we need to be mentioning his struggles with, man, he has no pass blocking protection and very little talent at pass catcher. And so I have a hard time separating those two things.
I hear you.
I do.
I feel like
I'm frustrating you with that answer.
No, you're not frustrating with me at all. It's just that the whole thing is frustrating. It's a frustrating thing to pick apart and try to analyze, because what is most important is that as he drops back before the snap, and then as he drops back and as he hits that spot in the pocket that he's dropped back into,
yeah,
has he seen everything and processed everything that he needs to process? Is he ready to make the right choice? And that's in his head. We're judging eyes. Trent Dilfer's judging eyes, you know, like all these different quarterback guys that we're looking for. This is the part that really needs to be judged and dissected. And it's in his brain what's happening or not happening. So before the snap, as he drops back, and once he hits the spot. And then what we are for sure seeing is that right now he does not have the aggressiveness and the instincts to go ahead and make those throws sometimes, whether it's the throw that he doesn't make, whether it's the decision to hold on too long and then run, like, you know, those kind of things. But if he's dropping back and seeing it and processing it and going through, that's what we're being asked to analyze, and it's a very difficult thing to see. I think this is why scouting the position is perhaps the most challenging thing in talent evaluation in all of sports.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is with what Dilfer was saying yesterday, like, Matt Eberflus talked about the third and long with the four verticals, and yeah, Mooney ran the wrong route. He didn't run a precise route, but it was close enough that Fields should be able to see it with the broken down coverage, step up in the pocket, and make it happen.
Especially now that we've seen like the all 22 of that, we've all had a day to kind of process that a little more. He is moving up in the pocket as it's happening. And to not have the eyes downfield and see that, That is concerning.
But they said that they told him, like, if this thing isn't there, go to your check down or run. You know, that's how they were coaching that play, which is a pretty conservative way. Look for the read. If the read's not there, check it down or run. As opposed to, well, actually scan the field, wait for it to develop, and then improv a little bit. Right? Mooney didn't run the right play, but if I throw the ball to the right spot, he can run under it. And do that. Rodgers would do that. Mahomes would do that.
Clearly,
right?
he's
not there to do anything that's like slightly off script.
He's not comfortable enough, or confident enough, or feeling like a made guy in their process to go ahead and just play.
Even though when he does do a couple things off script, it's because it's like forced to, right? Like if he gets flushed out of the pocket, and then he can make some nice plays happen with his feet or his arm.
Yes.
We've seen a couple of those. Like if he's rolling out, if he's on the move, he's just being an athlete, it seems to come a little bit more naturally to him. And then
the best of them just play like that.
Yeah.
And they feel like they know more than everybody. They feel like they know more than Getsy. They know more than the head coach. They know more. They're like, no, come on. I'm the one out there. I'm seeing the field. Like, this is my option, and that's what I'm going to do. And he's not ready to be that guy at all.
He's not.
So does that grow? Does that develop?
I believe that is like one of the absolute things that would develop. Comfort. I know the offense like the back of my hand. Comfort.
I believe in myself. I believe in my guys.
I believe in my left tackle that I'm going to have time here. I don't have to drop my eyes because my center is getting pushed back into my chest.
That's sensible from a human perspective.
I absolutely think that like that poise, pocket awareness, seeing the field, that to me is the game slowing down. That's when people talk about the game slowing down, those things are all related to each other. When the game slows down, you can do some more of the improvisational off schedule throws, the backyard football, that sort of thing. So I absolutely think that that can improve. The stuff that you don't know, like, will it ever? Like, you know what I mean? Does he have it for the processing? The NFL's complicated. It's fast. So it doesn't slow down for everybody. Mm-hmm. Can it? Yes. But I think that, you know, hopefully he has that. And the other one, man, got to take those layups.
Yes.
And Dilfer talked about that a couple weeks ago. When he took the 2-yard sack, and then it was 2nd and 12, and then they ran it and ran it, and then kicked the short field goal.
Uh-huh.
Komet is open for a 3-yard game.
That's the one.
And it's the read, and he's looking at him, and he doesn't throw it.
I don't understand why he didn't throw it.
I don't either.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
It's kind of brain freeze, some kind of caution.
I don't know.
And you hope that is a young man overwhelmed who will get less whelmed.
Is that it?
Did I nail that? Less whelmed?
I don't think so. I don't think you can be.
He'll become under. If he's overwhelmed, we want him to just be whelmed.
Whelmed.
Just naturally whelmed.
Just be good. Please just be good.
Is that an analogy that works in here? Shane, you had an analogy. Was it White Sox related? Did you not get to it?
Yeah, no. I'm teasing it for the 4 o'clock.
For tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll tease it for tomorrow.
26 hour tease.
I have been workshopping and punching up what I think is a pretty good White Sox analogy. Oh,
that's exciting.
A little bit after 4 o'clock.
That's good. That's good to know that's coming.
But one real quick thing. I don't know which, because there were so many of them, I don't know which receiver miss you guys are specifically talking about there. Was it the Darnell Mooney all the way down the seam, that one?
That was the first one I brought up.
That's the first one. The second one that I noticed the most, watching some stuff on social and TikTok today. By the way, there are a ton of good like football quarterback breaker downers going on TikTok right now.
Breaker downers.
Yeah, I'm efforting a couple of them. So we'll see.
That would whelm me.
Yeah, one of them is the head coach from Last Chance U, Jason Brown.
Oh, nice.
Awesome on TikTok. A lot of stuff going on the side there, but awesome breaking down.
Okay, good. Breaker downers.
What he saw specifically in the second one, I think it was Cole Kmet after a middle linebacker blitz. After he's talking about replacement. So Justin Fields doesn't know how to replace where that blitz is coming from. But a lot of the times, he's not even looking up.
So wherever he left from is open.
When the mic comes over, Justin has to understand that Cole Kmet is likely open right over the middle. And that happened 3 times that he broke down, and he didn't hit any of them.
Well, and that goes back to that stat about the 49 times under pressure and only 5 completions.
That was a little rambly. Sorry. I got excited about Jason Brown from Last Chance.
I gotcha.
Breaker downer.
I just liked hearing that passion about sports takery. There, he's watching quarterback breaker downers on TikTok.
Yeah, I don't know if he's really. I mean, TikTok has a lot of stuff. Are you making the right choice out there?
Is the algorithm working
in these TikTok streets?
Yeah.
There's no way to
know. And dancing hot women.
That's a good algorithm.
That's what I thought was more your lane.
That's perfect.
I get them both.
Boomer Esiason can certainly talk quarterbacks, but also I'm interested in this. Mike Tomlin came out today and said Kenny Pickett will not be graded on a curve, but Luke Getsy has said it's basically like a rookie year for Justin Fields. That sounds a lot like grading a quarterback on a curve. Who's right? We ask Boomer Esiason next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.